Welcome to The Honest Report, a weekly podcast analyzing media coverage of the Arab Israeli conflict, anti-Semitism, and radical Islamic terrorism.
Violence escalating between Israel and the Palestinians, hundreds of rockets fired from Gaza toward Israel, people running for cover.
We start the show with the breaking news that has been coming in. Israeli police are saying that at least seven people have been injured in a car ramming and stabbing attack in Tel Aviv.
Hundreds of rockets fired from Gaza towards Israel. People running for cover on this Tel Aviv beach as air defense systems blew rockets out the sky.
Here's your host, Rob Walker.
30 years ago, on September 13, 1993, Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization, or PLO, signed the Declaration of Principles on Interim Self-Government Arrangements, more commonly known as part of the Oslo Accords, so-called because they were secretly negotiated in the Norwegian capital of Oslo. What are the significance of these accords 3 decades later, and do they help provide any hope for future peace between Israel and the Palestinians? What exactly caused the Oslo Accords, once seen as a promising roadmap towards negotiations, to fail? To help share an in-depth analysis behind Oslo, we are joined by Maurice Hirsch. He previously served as Director of the Military Prosecution for Judea and Samaria, and he's currently the Director of the Palestinian Authority Accountability and Reform Initiative at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. Welcome to the Honest Report podcast. Maurice Hirsch, welcome to the Honest Report podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The pleasure is all ours. We are, of course, as you know, really in the thick of the 30th anniversary of the signing of the Oslo Accords, Oslo I, between Israel and then the Palestine Liberation Organization. Tell us a little bit about, I think the Oslo Accords is one of those things that a lot of people have heard of. There's been reference to it all the time in the news media, you know, in Israel, you know, over the last 3 decades. And yet, I think there's very little understanding or a lot of misunderstanding in many corners about what exactly the Oslo Accords were and what they weren't. Can you give us a little bit of an understanding, a little bit of an introduction?
Yeah. So the Oslo Accords were basically the accords signed between Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization. The Palestine Liberation Organization until then had been recognized as a terrorist organization by Israel because of numerous terrorist attacks that it had carried out. And now that the two sides were ostensibly coming to an agreement that would really pave the way for going forward. On the one hand, Israel agreed to allow the Palestinians, PLO, to set up this new autonomous body called the Palestinian Authority. That body would be responsible for running the day-to-day life of the Palestinians, and it would be, for all intents and purposes, the representative body of the Palestinians. It would be elected by the Palestinians in free elections, both for the position of almost the head of the Palestinian Authority and for the Palestinian Parliament. And this body was committed itself to fighting terror and to fighting any type of expression of violence on the side of the Palestinians towards Israel. Israel, on its part, was required also to provide this body with money that would allow it to function, tax income that Israel had waived on behalf of the Palestinian Authority. Now, the agreements themselves were signed in September 1993, the first one, and then additional agreements over the period through September 1995. The Palestinians really had very, very few commitments as part of these agreements. It was mostly Israel giving and giving and giving to the Palestinians. The Palestinians were committed to relinquishing, denouncing, abandoning entirely, I cannot add in sufficient superlatives, the path of violence and terror as a means to achieve their political goals. And they were committed to fighting terrorism within Palestinian society. That was meant to be the idea of the Oslo Accords. Unfortunately, the reality was very, very different. We know that Yitzhak Rabin, then prime minister, felt that he had been deceived by his foreign minister, Shimon Peres, and by Arafat himself, into believing that the time had come for peace, and But really, Arafat had clearly a different idea. Arafat's idea was that the Oslo Peace Accords would just be a partial implementation of a 1974 PLO, fundamental document, which was the plan of stages, that said that this organization will take anything that it can from Israel, from the international community, in order to set up a forward base in Judea, Samaria, Israel, wherever possible, as a means to finally destroying Israel. Yasser Arafat would describe the Oslo Accords as equivalent to the Treaty of the Hudaybiyah, a treaty entered into by Muhammad with the Quraysh people, where he promised a 10-year peace agreement, and then it was broken after 2 years, and then Muhammad conquered Mecca. That was Yasser Arafat's idea of the agreements from the outset, and so it's not really a surprise that that's how they then further developed, as the PLO, using the accords and using everything that Israel had given as a means to attack, delegitimize Israel, and really to forward its goal of ultimately destroying Israel.
So the Oslo Accords were not, of course, a final, what is called a final status sort of, you know, agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. It was really representing sort of an interim stepping stone. Explain to me sort of what the vision was supposed to, was there a time limit, you know, encapsulated here, or some kind of a sunset clause? What was the grand vision behind it?
So the idea of the Oslo Accords, as they clearly state, is that they are, at least the interim agreement was a 5-year agreement, during which time the sides were then meant to negotiate a final status. Exactly what that final status is, we'll discuss it. I'll discuss in a second. And in that final status agreements, they would make reference and resolve the outstanding subjects of borders, of Israeli settlements, of Jerusalem, of the refugees. These were the fundamental ideas that were meant to be then negotiated. But what we found is that the Palestinians had their demands. Within their demands, there was no room for any type of movement, and therefore their demands, when left unfulfilled, were really the basis for Yasser Arafat in September 2000, almost 5 years to the day after the signing of the second Oslo Agreement in September 1995, launching the terror war, which he unleashed, which then raged on for 5 years, and claimed almost 2,000 Israeli lives. That was meant to be the idea. 5 years, negotiations, come to an agreement. Now, what were the final status? Discussing or presenting Israel's vision of the final status agreement was obviously Yitzhak Rabin. Yitzhak Rabin, in an address to the Knesset on the 5th of October, 1995, just a month before he was unfortunately murdered, described what he saw as the Oslo Accords and the final status. He said he was talking just a week after, obviously, the interim agreement was signed. He said that what I envisage is an autonomous body, short of a state, that will run the day-to-day lives of the Palestinians and have control over their lives in the defined areas. Israel will always remain in control of the Jordan Valley, and that will be part of our unequivocal security requirement. That's how Yitzhak Rabin saw the Oslo Accords.
Now, you wrote a very detailed op-ed in the Jerusalem Post back in April discussing the upcoming 30th anniversary of Oslo and the failure of it. And you take a lot of issue with the Palestinians and really the Israeli response to the Palestinians' very assertive international diplomacy as far as getting recognition of a Palestinian state, arguing that that actually was precluded by the Oslo Accords. Tell us about what that means exactly.
Yes, of course. As I mentioned before, there was no mention of Palestinian statehood in the Oslo Accords. It was not a subject that was going to happen. It was not something which Israel, from its part, saw as a result of the final status agreements, but rather an entity short of a state. On the one hand, Yasser Arafat, as I said before, he didn't really care as to what he had committed himself to. He didn't really care that he had committed himself to further negotiating the subject, for example, of the Israeli settlements. Now, if you're negotiating the subject of the Israeli settlements, that clearly doesn't mean that you demand and require that every Israeli settlement be dismantled and the Jews be thrown out of their homes in Judea and Samaria or in Gaza, and those areas then become the embodiment of the Nazi idea of Judenfrei areas. That was obviously not something that Israel had anticipated or definitely not agreed to. And so that's something which, whilst the Palestinian Authority and the PLO then pushed forward on every front possible to receive recognition for the state of Palestine, that is a fundamental breach of the Oslo Accords. That was not something that was meant to happen. The PLO was meant to adhere to the agreements that it had signed onto. And instead, what it did was take this into the international community to gain recognition for the Palestinian state and for the state of Palestine, a state which has received not a small amount of recognition, but a state which doesn't exist anywhere. And let's put it on the table. A state of Palestine never existed ever in any time in history. So now they've created the state which doesn't meet the requirements of international law for being a state. It doesn't have a set people. It doesn't have a set area that it controls. It doesn't have a government that it controls. You've really got a despotic leadership controlling this group of people who call themselves the Palestinians, but really have no historical background. I used to work at Palestinian Media Watch, and we have videos from Palestinian historians who say that, well, in 1917, there was no such thing as a Palestinian people. There's the famous interview with Golda Meir on BBC TV, where she says, well, I'm a Palestinian, when she's talking about the period of 1922 to 1944, when the area was run under the mandate for Palestine. And she says, well, I was a Palestinian. When was the term Palestinian made unique only to Arabs and not to Jews? During the period of the mandate, Palestinians were the Jews, not the Arabs, Dafka. And so it's interesting to see how that whole situation has been inverted. And now suddenly the Palestinians are only Arabs. And the Palestinians are the people who are the rightful, as they claim, the rightful owners of Judea and Samaria. I mean, if you look at the original covenant of the PLO, the original charter from 1964, 65, before Israel even liberated Judea and Samaria or Gaza, it says that this organization has no territorial claim to either the West Bank, as it was called, because that was then Jordanian, or to Gaza, which was then under Egyptian control. Their only territorial claim was to Israel. That they've never given up on. They've just now adopted for themselves these extra areas, which they claim as theirs as well.
Now, you mentioned the PLO covenant. The Oslo Accords do require a revision of the PLO covenant by the Palestinians to remove their expressions of desire for the destruction of Israel. That, of course, was not done, but that was noted in the 1995 update of the Oslo Accords. But give us a little bit of an understanding, because there's very little coverage in news media about, you know, the Hamas covenant or the PLO, charter and covenant. And yet these have definitely played a very significant role, I think, in Israel recognizing their lack of a peace partner. So help us understand a little bit that the Palestinians were required to update it in 1993. They didn't do so. So what happened in 1995 when there was sort of the stage two of the Oslo Accords?
So the Palestinian covenant, the PLO covenant, I cannot understate it. This is really the constitution of the organization that we signed a peace agreement with. This is their lighthouse, their guiding document from which everything flows and to which everything is dedicated. This document had multiple provisions that called for the destruction of Israel, for the use of violence for the destruction of Israel, for the expulsion of all Jews from Palestine, from Israel, and for the establishment of a Judenfrei Palestinian national state. As part of the peace agreement, Yasser Arafat committed to amend the PLO charter. He never did so. There was a timeline set. He never met it. It was met. It was raised again in the second Oslo agreement in 1995. And again, Yasser Arafat didn't meet his agreement, and the PLO flouted that agreement and commitment until we get to a stage where in April 1996, finally, after not a small amount of pressure, the Palestinian National Council meets and they say, well, we agree to adopt what Yasser Arafat had committed to, and we are empowering a committee to draw up a new charter which will embody the amendment and abolishment of the provisions in the charter which were contrary to the commitments given. That decision really doesn't say very much. It doesn't say that they're actually cancelling the provisions. It just says that they're appointing a committee to draw up a new charter. That committee would never meet. The subject would come up again in January, February 1998, when again Yasser Arafat will say, well, under pressure from America, we've already done that, so we don't have to do it again. Suffice it to say that in the October 1998 plantation agreement, there is another specific provision which requires the PLO to meet its commitment to cancel the provisions in the charter which are contrary to their commitments to peace. And then later on, in December 1998, Bill Clinton himself, the President of the United States, would be present at a meeting of the Palestinian National Council, where they would again affirm the commitment given by Yasser Arafat in his letter in February 1998, which says that we've amended the charter. No one takes into account that really what that commitment said was worth nothing, because they were again required to amend the charter. But then everyone decided that the Palestinians have done enough. No one really had the political courage to say Yasser Arafat had again betrayed his commitments in the Oslo Accords. No one had the political courage to say that Bill Clinton had been the victim of another Yasser Arafat ploy, where he had really brought him into this whole situation and then played him for a fool. And no one had the political courage to say that the Americans knew that Yasser Arafat was playing everyone for a fool, but could no longer really pressure him into doing any more. And so this was just another one of the representative examples of how Yasser Arafat made specific commitments in the name of the PLO. He never lived up to those commitments. He fooled everyone, whether willing fools or people who were genuinely unable to understand what was going on. And yet the world has now assumed that the PLO met its requirements. The PLO itself still has on its website all of the original charter. And then if you get to the end, it says in February 1998, pursuant to our commitments in the Y Plantation Agreement, which only happened in October 1998, we amended the following provisions. But really, it's trying to play that whole card of we're fooling everyone. Everyone knows that we're lying, but it's the Palestinians, so we'll get all the leeway we need, really, because the goal is to destroy Israel.
Well, Maurice Hirst, thank you so much for giving us, a very in-depth analysis and overview of not just what the Oslo Accords were, but certainly the significance even here we are 3 decades later. Thank you so much for your time and expertise.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's today's edition of the Honest Report podcast. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to our mailing list, our podcast channel, and follow us on social media for the most up-to-date news. If you like what you've heard, please consider a donation to support our continued efforts at www.honestreporting.ca/donate. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.